The 2008 U.S. Farm Bill is set to expire in 2 years, and the agricultural community has already started to mobilize for substantive changes to be made in the 2012 version of the bill. To date, the passage of the Farm Bill that occurs every 4 or 5 years has elicited little public attention, allowing farm state legislators and corporate agribusinesses to dictate the writing and voting process. Now, farmers and food activists hope to see increasing public participation in the upcoming debate, as more and more people realize the consequences of poor food policy. Among those consequences are highly priced fresh and organic produce that is inaccessible to poor people, hormone and antibiotic-fed livestock, pesticide and waste runoff into drinking water sources, monopolization of market prices, and huge subsidies to giant agribusinesses that result in produce surplus. Surplus which is then dumped onto the world market with devastating effects to poor farmers in other areas. The national organization Food and Water Watch, which has a chapter in Los Angeles, now turns to the Farm Bill to implement new agricultural policies that can turn the situation around. Joining me from Food and Water Watch is Patty Lovera. She's their assistant director and lead food policy expert. She's in town right now this weekend for a number of events, and she joins me in studio. Welcome to Uprising, Patty.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, we've had you on the phone a few times. We'll welcome you to LA. Let's talk about the Farm Bill and why there hasn't been that much public participation in previous years. What does the Farm Bill encompass?
That's the million-dollar, actually billions of dollar question. It really encompasses our whole food system. So the Farm Bill, the name is actually really part of the problem. We like to call it the food bill because if you eat, you should care about this bill. It's not just for farmers. It's not just for the Midwest. That's one of the misperceptions. So it covers everything from the things some people know about, like, you know, are there going to be payments to farmers for growing corn or soybeans? But it also covers things like research into food, you know, what types of food, how do we do it, where do we do it? A tremendous amount of money about how farmers interact with the environment. They're called conservation programs. What do they do that impacts our water quality, our air quality? And then the kind of the piece I think most people don't know, and the way the Farm Bill impacts most of us, is that the food stamp program, so nutrition is the name that the USDA gives it, but the literally the issue of who eats, who has access to food, who gets help when they need it, that's in the Farm Bill. And it's actually the biggest dollar amount program in the Farm Bill is food stamps.
Isn't it amazing how nutrition is often the word substituted when really they mean food?
Right. This is literally the issue of who gets to eat. I mean, this is about whether people will get help when they need it. It's that essential. So, you know, things get wrapped up in funny word choices in Washington, but it's literally access to food.
So there are so many different aspects to the Farm Bill. What is your organization, Food and Water Watch, focused on?
So that's one of the issues. And I think that's one of the other reasons people haven't gotten involved over the years, is it gets kind of complex. And lots of people in Washington like it that way because it keeps us from paying attention to it. We think a lot of things have to change, but they fit into two columns. So we think that the Farm Bill has to focus on making sure that markets are fair. So farmers who do things the right way can make a living. They can get a fair price for doing things the right way. And we can end this cycle we've had for the last several decades where they're forced to get big or get out. That was the slogan in agriculture for a long time. And that's because they don't get paid very well. So they try to make up for it by getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And most of us don't like the food that comes out of that system. And then the other column is we need a bunch of changes and policy and spending government money wisely to rebuild regional food systems. We've really lost the connection or the idea that a region should be fairly, you know, food self-sufficient. And so we're shipping food all over the country, all over the world.
So we should be getting off of Fiji water?
For example, that would be a great example. And also, you know, there's lots and lots of people that are getting into farming and want to grow food the right way, and tremendous numbers of consumers that would love to support them. And we've lost the links in the middle, you know, the distribution, the processing. So that takes money. We're going to have to rebuild what was lost, the infrastructure and the connections, so that our region or a part of the country can be a little more self-sufficient, which makes a lot more sense.
And as in several books have been written about in recent years, one that comes to mind is Raj Patel's book, Stuffed and Starved. The food production is really a global system now, and there's a huge chokehold on how most of the world gets fed by just a handful of growers. growers. You know, we might be spoiled here in California because we have farmers markets and we do grow some of our own food and people do have some access to that. But around the country and other parts of the world, the majority of food that people eat is controlled by just a handful of companies.
And that's actually true here in California and in the U.S. I mean,
I'm being overly optimistic.
Well, as part of this is, again, this is not an accident. Most of what we don't like about our food system is not an accident. It's the result of bad policy, and it's the result of really a tremendous loss of competition and corporate consolidation. And so, you know, I think the mythology we have to break through is that as consumers and, you know, that the customer's always right and we have all these choices. When I go to the grocery store, there's aisle after aisle of food and there's all these brands and there's all these labels. So it must be a really diverse, thriving system when, in fact, in most industries, a tiny number of companies are in control. So just to give one number, because it's early in the morning, I'll only give one. But, you know, in the beef industry, 85% of cattle in this country are slaughtered by four companies.
Wow.
There may be a lot of brands in the store, but chances are what you're buying is from one of those big giant companies. And that means they get to decide how it's raised, what it's priced. They get to call all the shots.
And so if there's an outbreak of E. coli in one of those, you're talking about thousands and thousands of places that sell that meat being affected. And so that centralization of our food system has direct consequences.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a system that's net. We've lost so much small processing, local processing. And so meat is just one of the – it's true across the board. It's true for produce. Vegetarians aren't off the hook on this one. But meat is one of the classic examples where thousands of small meat plants have been lost. So there's ranchers and farmers who are raising animals the right way. They don't want to do business with a Tyson or, you know, a Cargill who has a meat division. They would like to do something more local. They don't have the option. So they end up selling their cattle into this kind of, you know, big, anonymous commodity market, and we've lost small plants, so now the slaughterhouses are big. One thing goes wrong in a big slaughterhouse, you've just made a whole big part of the country sick because you're distributing so much food from one plant.
And so sustainable livestock is another demand or another focus of Food and Water Watch in the Farm Bill?
Absolutely. There's so many pieces of the Farm Bill that could help turn that around. And we're literally reversing things, bad trends that have to be reversed. So literally issues of fairness of markets. You know, can farmers and ranchers get a fair shot? Do they – there's legal changes that have to be made to say that companies can't do some things they do in contracts that basically turn farmers kind of into their contract workers, which is already epidemic in the chicken industry. There's things about you know, we grow way too much corn and soybeans and corporations like it that way. That makes corn and soybeans cheap, which is very convenient for them to feed them to animals and factory farms. So there's so many ways we have to start chipping away at the bad policy that's built this meat system, and many of them are in the Farm Bill.
And also, as we were talking about in our last story, farm workers and their working conditions are also encompassed in the Farm Bill, aren't they?
There's several places that the Farm Bill can help workers. There's some really, you know, really basic stuff about the USDA spends money in rural communities. They call it rural economic development. Some of that could be done in much smarter ways to provide programs for farm workers. And then some of it is reforming some of these fairness issues and dialing back how much control these corporations have. And hopefully that would level the playing field not only for farmers but for farm labor, for workers and plants. And, you know, if we didn't have such giant slaughterhouses, maybe we would have a better chance of slowing down the lines, which is better for food safety, but it's also better for workers. You know, there's lots of ways we have to dial back big ag, and we hope that workers would benefit from that too.
I'm speaking with Patty Lavera. She is Food and Water Watch's assistant director and lead food policy expert. She's joining me in studio, and we're talking about the 2012 Farm Bill. So, Patty, we're talking about something that's 2 years on out, but what you're saying, I think, is leading me and our listeners, I hope, to realize that if you're interested in where your food comes from, where your water comes from, if you're interested in safe farm jobs, if you're interested in small local farming, if you're interested in global warming and how to curb it, if you're interested in almost any one of these enormous environmental and food-related issues, you need to be interested in the Farm Bill.
Absolutely. And so, you know, I'm actually from D.C. and I'm spending the week in California to have conversations like this. And so later this morning, we're going over to talk to people at Hunger Action L.A. because everybody who eats should care about this bill. There's nobody that gets a pass on this one because as far as I know, everybody eats.
Right. If you're worried about poverty issues, as you said, the food stamp question. Mm-hmm. So how can people get involved? I mean, it's, as you said, the D.C., Washington likes to keep it big and complicated so that they can have, you know, bill that's thousands of pages long and might overwhelm different organizations from around the country. How does one tackle the farm bill and try to make changes to it against an industry that has billions to spare on lobbying congressmen?
I mean, I think one of the first issues is for regular folks, for all of us, to be talking to our elected officials about food. They haven't really heard that we want a different food system from us in a really long time. They hear about other things. Just because I'm a nerd from Washington, I know that they're all headed back home. They're mm-hmm. in recess. I think today's the House of Representatives' last day of work for the summer. So you're going to see them around. They're trying to make sure they get reelected. Talk to them about food. Right now, Congress is way behind. They're a year behind in renewing a bill that sets up the school lunch program. It's called the Child Nutrition Act. If you see them out there, say, hey, why isn't this passed? And why is the food in school lunches so bad? I want you to figure out a way to spend the government's money to buy better food. I mean, call them on it. I mean, I think that's the first thing we have to do. And then groups like ours, lots of groups will be tracking the farm bill. So, you know, check out our website. We have foodandwaterwatch.org where you can get action alerts as we go through this process. There's lots of little pieces that take us towards the farm bill and help us build that power that we're going to have to build to turn them around.
And so that website, again, is foodandwaterwatch.org. And is there a place specifically on that website where people can find out about the farm bill?
Yeah, there's a food button that'll take you to those resources. And we also have an action center. If you hit take action, we're always going to have things that are kind of relevant to this debate, and so it's a good place to keep an eye on.
What about here in Southern California, specific issues that people can mobilize and organize around? I know you're from D.C., but mm-hmm. in your work here, and since your organization has a chapter here, what are some of the local struggles that people can get involved in?
Thanks for asking that. We actually just opened up or had invited the public to our new office in L.A. last night, so folks in Southern California can check out the website and look for our L.A. office. They can get involved to volunteer. And so one of the best things we can do is spread the word, because California, as you all know, I mean, you have a huge congressional delegation. You have several members on the agriculture committees of Congress right now. And so getting Californians, you know, educated about this, sharing it with your neighbors, volunteering to help us spread the word. And then there's lots of connections to things like the water bond proposal, which mm-hmm. is currently in flux right now with a lot of state politics. But the biggest beneficiaries of that would be industrial agriculture. So lots of water issues are a ways to start to kind of crack this issue as well. And our California organizers are really involved in that.
I want to spend a little bit of time in the end of our interview on the issue that we started out talking with. You mentioned about equalizing the playing field for small farmers, given that California is home to many small farmers. And so many people do struggle to try to keep their farms afloat. Here in California, how do specifically subsidies to big agribusinesses hurt small farmers? Are small farmers ever eligible themselves for subsidies?
It depends what kind of farmer they are. So the subsidy program that, you know, that gets described that way, dairy farmers are in that system. So small dairy farmers often will end up getting some government payments. And then the other subsidy payments go to the jargon for it is commodity crops. So these are basically corn, soybeans, rice, cotton, grains that you can store for a long time. And so that's been one of the controversies, and I think it's why a lot of people think, oh, California is not impacted by the farm bill. That's for the Midwest. But some of that is grown in California. And then the other question is, we need to fix that system. That system is geared towards producing cheap corn for corn syrup and animal feed, and that's one of the biggest battles we have in the farm bill. But there's lots of other money and there's lots of other programs in the farm bill, and we need to make it easier for small farmers to get into those programs. And there are things like transitioning to organic. There's some government support for that. There should be more. It should be easier to do that. There's a lot of money that the government spends on conservation. That's what they call a whole family of programs about if you do certain environmental practices, you know, we'll support that. We'll help you put in equipment or something to improve water quality. Or if it's fragile land, maybe you don't grow on that piece of fragile land, and there's support for that. So, you know, doing those programs well and fairly so small farmers can get into those programs is another key piece of what we need to do.
And finally, I'm assuming that big agribusinesses themselves are starting 2 years ahead to try to organize themselves around what they'd like to see in the 2012 Farm Bill. Any idea what we're up against?
It's not even that they're starting ahead. They never stop.
Right.
The
sure.
Farm bill's never quite
good
over.
Point.
So we're actually in a nasty fight right now. We're trying to keep alive a rule that was from the last farm bill about what these meat companies can do when they do financial dealings with small farmers. And so we're always up against that. So this is something Congress told USDA to do in 2008. And now the industry is squawking about it. And Congress is saying, oh, why did you do that, USDA? They're pretending they didn't tell them. So it's kind of always on. And I think what we have to start doing is taking this out of the jargon, taking this out of this specialized thing the Agriculture Committee does, talking about the food bill and saying we as citizens are going to hold our members of Congress accountable for a better food system.
Well, Patty Lavera, I want to thank you very much for joining us today. We hope to have you back on in the future as the farm bill continues to be tweaked, and hopefully listeners have the chance to tweak it through your organization and other groups. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Again, the Food and Water Watch is the name of the organization. My guest, Patty Lavera, is its assistant director and lead food policy expert. They just opened up a new LA chapter. You can find out more at foodandwaterwatch.org, and we'll link to that from our website later today at uprisingradio.org. For Sonali Subversive Thought for the Day, Jacques Cousteau once said, if we go on the way we have, the fault is our greed, and if we are not willing to change, we will disappear from the face of the globe to be replaced by the insect. That's Jacques Cousteau. That's Sonali Subversive Thought for the Day.